Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have Jane Buckingham on the line, and she's founder and CEO of Trendera. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. So nice to be here.
All right, Jane. So who better to bring on the show to learn about trends and what's coming up in 2022 than the founder and CEO of Trendera. So I'm really excited to have you on the show today and to get your insight into what we can look forward to going into 2022. And just to get us kicked off, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So Jane, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Jane, what mission matters to you?
Gosh, I think I'm really grateful that I am in a profession that allows me to do what matters to me, which is to understand people and then hopefully communicate what people are thinking and feeling in a way that makes them more understandable to other generations. So whether it be their parents or their professors or their kids, there are so many differences among different people. And I think today more than ever, it's important to understand why people behave the way they do and think the way they do. And I've been doing this for almost 30 years now and have seen several generations come and evolve. And so it's been really nice to be able to allow them to speak to us and then hopefully convey that to whoever wants to hear about them.
Fantastic. Love bringing mission-based entrepreneurs and executives on the line to share why they do what they do. So great stuff and a great topic here today. And before we get into that, though, maybe let's just start a little bit further back. So like, how'd you get started really as an entrepreneur and on this path to starting Trendera?
You know, I always consider myself a really reluctant entrepreneur. I didn't start out thinking that I was going to run my own businesses. Yeah. And Trendera is the second of my two businesses. The first one I started when I was 26, and it was a business called Youth Intelligence. And I ultimately sold that. And I think it actually started even earlier when I was 16. And I wrote a book about teenagers called Teen Speak Out. And, well, this was a long time ago, right?
You're writing books as a teenager? That's amazing. Go ahead.
Well, I wasn't very good at sports. And as my best friend said at the time, she said that I'd always been more of an observer than a participant. And I think because my generation is Gen X. And so I think we were sort of the first generation that the people before us said, you know, not just, oh, these crazy kids, they do things differently, but wow, they fundamentally think and behave differently than the previous generations. And I remember reading a book by a, probably my age now, psychiatrist saying, this is why they are the way they are. And I said, that's not really true. And so I wanted to present sort of who we were in a different way. And obviously you're generalizing and stereotyping, and there are many different cultures and incomes and ages even within a generation. But at the time, the goal was to say, this is who we are and this is some of how we think. And that's what led to my wanting to start a company that allowed other companies and other people to understand who they were.
So I'll tell you, you're the first person I've heard say reluctant entrepreneur. I've heard a lot of like prefixes there, like accidental entrepreneur, all these other ones, but reluctant one, that's a new one to me. Maybe I was a reluctant one too. I don't know. I feel like I might have been. But so now there's something that happened here though. And I like to just, you know, take a moment on this one. So you had an idea and then you turned it into a business. There's a lot of people that are out there, or maybe you saw a challenge or a problem or a gap in the marketplace that you could fill. And you ended up going, you know, as a reluctant entrepreneur, you turned it into a business. So there's some people watching this right now that maybe they're considering launching a business or they're thinking about it, or they're in this transition period or pivot or however you want to say it. And they're thinking about going the entrepreneurial route. What kind of things would you tell them just based off of obviously your, you know, benefit of hindsight and some of the things that you've learned over the years?
You know, someone said to me once, the one thing you need to start a business is clients.
Yeah.
And it's really simple, but it's true, right? So you have to think, are there people who want what I'm going to sell, whether it's a product or a service or an idea? And I think certainly over the years, people have this myth that being an entrepreneur gives you tons of freedom. It doesn't. It's actually the opposite. I think it really, especially when you first start, you are taking no time off. At the end of the day, it's all you. Yeah. And it's not easier. It can become more flexible. And I am incredibly grateful for the flexibility that I've had throughout the years in the sense that I could go with my kids to do the things they needed to do or not do certain things that I didn't want to do. But I think it's really hard. And I think that's the biggest myth. And then the other is that people forget that there are systems that you really have to put in place, whether it's legal, bookkeeping, HR, those things that when you start with an idea and you're super excited, you forget that you have to put those systems in place. And sometimes investing a little bit of time and sometimes money to make sure those things are really good at the beginning will really help you out down the line. And then the last thing I think is all we ever hear about are people's successes, right? Yeah. Oh my God, this amazing entrepreneur who made this much money or seems to have done everything right. It's like there are no overnight sensations. There are no not making mistakes. Mm-hmm. So give yourself a break. If you do make some of those mistakes along the way, it shouldn't discourage you.
Yeah, well said. Give yourself a break. And I feel like even entrepreneurship aside, like things like, you know, kids going to college or things like that, it's like, you don't know, you can't plan out what you think the rest of your life's going to look like when you're 18, 19, even 20, 20 some, like things change. Like the marketplace changes around you. Your wants, your preferences change. I'll tell you, Jane, if somebody said, when I was in college, like, did I think I was going to be a podcaster? I don't even know if podcasting was around when I was in college. I'm like, how could you have predicted it? And some of the jobs and the things that are going to happen in the future they're not even been invented yet. So give yourself a little bit of break. I like that one, Jane.
I agree. I think it's an interesting time. It's a time with a lot of opportunity because the jobs that will exist 10 years from now are really different than the ones that exist now. Mm-hmm. But that's a ton of opportunity. But it is also scary when you have to chart a non-traditional path. So I think hopefully we as a society can recognize that some of the old paths don't always work and some of the new paths are worth trying. Mm.
So switching gears just a little bit here. So going back into trends of 2022. So I know you work a lot with different segments of the population. So millennials, Gen Z, and you forecast these. So let's just start off the conversation maybe kind of broad. Like what kind of trends are you noticing for these groups?
You know, I think in the 30 years that I've been doing this or 25 years, I've never seen so much fluctuation in trends. Wow. And, you know, we used to do telephones or in-person surveys and then telephone surveys and then internet surveys. And as a researcher, I'm skeptical of research. But today, I find more than ever, people genuinely don't know how they're feeling or they feel one thing today and one thing tomorrow. So as a trend forecaster, it's actually really hard because you have to listen and hear and try to say, well, is that something that's going to last for a long time or something that's going to disappear the next time we have a big COVID spike or variant? Yeah. So it is a challenging time, but as I said, a really interesting time because I think more than ever, we are seeing fundamental things in society change in a way they never had. I think that we have a workforce that previously wanted to work from home or wanted to have more flexibility, but big companies wouldn't allow that. And yet every time the companies today say, no, you don't have to come in or okay, now we're looking not at January 1st, we're looking at March 1st. Oh, we're looking at June 1st. It's just fundamentally changing the way big systems operate. So I think over the next 5 years, we are going to see a real shift in the workplace that people not be going in every day. They will not be making the same pacts to be with a company for 5 years, 10 years. It might not even be 1 year. So I think that it's going to be a worker-based society where the talent drives the answers and companies are going to have to adjust. Now, I do recognize that there are different economic issues there. Obviously, if you are a frontline worker, whether it be frontline in the hospitals, frontline in a big retailer or at a grocery store, sometimes there isn't that same flexibility. But I do think everywhere it is going to be the workers who make the rules. I think education is going to change. It is not sustainable to have a four-year education that leaves people in huge, huge debt and come out not necessarily getting the job they trained for. So I think we'll see real shifts to more online, more two-year education. hopefully more forgiving of loans. I think that just on more sort of fun trends, I think that we will see a lot of things that are mood-based. You already start seeing it on streaming music and what we're watching, but we're so sensitive to our own particular moods because our moods are fluctuating so much that I think we'll see more products and services based on, do you want to feel excited? Do you want to feel relaxed? Do you want to feel secure?
Yeah.
And will be some of the products that are super successful because we are trying so hard to regulate our moods and to feel safety and security in an ever-changing time that that's one of the ways that we'll find it.
I want to unpack a few of these things because really interesting what you're talking about, whether it's the mood side of things, which I'll save that one for a moment, but let's focus a little bit more on the workforce and what people should be thinking about. Cause a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, executives watch this and we hear this in the news a lot right now, you know, staffing shortage of people to fill roles, technical roles, executive roles, just roles across the board. And now considering that there's this workforce gap, we'll say, considering now that, you know, remote, not remote, hybrid, like as you mentioned, like this, do you think, or maybe you didn't, but do you think this is going to change in the near future? Like it seems to me like this trend is going to, in your experience, you tell me, but in my limited experience with looking at trends, it looks like we're not changing back to the old way. Like this trend is going to continue.
So. I don't think so. One of my favorite quotes was from Bill Gates, who said, people overestimate the change that happens in 5 years and underestimate the change that happens in 10. Yeah. Well, I think that's usually true, except for today, when I think change is really happening quickly. And I think once that train left the station and people said, oh, actually, I can be effective from home. Oh, I can be effective at different hours. Oh, I can have this flexibility. It's really hard to put that back. And so I don't really see a change in that. I mean, again, there are certain businesses that will need people to be front and center in the office at different times. And I think hopefully COVID will become less deadly, less dramatic. I don't know the science of that, but hopefully the fear will change. But I think the practicality of people recognizing that they can work differently isn't going to change. And I think that the smart managers, the smart businesses are going to look for ways to utilize that. I mean, if you think about it, for a big business, that means they can have less space that they have to have their employees in every day. If we can figure out how to do things remotely, why do you have to be there? We've all been looking for that elusive balance in our lives. And I don't know that working from home guarantees that. Certainly for a lot of people with young kids or who can't work from home where other people are, that's, you know, a problem. But I think that we're going to see a world where people say, I don't have to do it the old way. And so I'm going to lean into the companies that allow me to do it in a more modern way.
Yeah. And to me, it just, when I think about the end result, right? So of just the workplace in general, it's productivity, right? Whatever your business is, whether it's a service, it's a consumer product, whatever, like you're looking for a certain level of productivity out of your workforce. So if we just look at that as the fundamental. So if you can add a little bit of balance or you can add some other things to it and still have your productivity. I mean, to me, in many cases, of course, there's some that it doesn't work that way, but in many cases, it seems like there's the potential for like some real good win-win scenarios.
Well, even, you know, if you look at America versus the rest of the world, we seem to have always been driven by this intense, the more hours you spend, that shows that you're a worker, right? You should never take vacation because it means you're not committed. And you look at Europe where they're taking, or we're taking, you know, 6 weeks off or siestas or what have you, you sort of go, there's got to be another way. And I do think that it's going to be less about FaceTime and personal FaceTime necessarily and just putting in the hours, and people who can get the job done are going to be the ones who thrive.
Yeah. Oh, I still blame the greatest generation for this one. Like, where was my gap year between college and like workforce, or between like, I want my gap year back.
Right? I think that would be a great, not that I think I'm one to talk about how education should work. But I do think that what could be interesting is if colleges rethought it and had people come for 2 years to do more general education, go work for a year, and then come back to really hone in on the skills that you want. Because goodness knows, if we had that gap year, we would have appreciated our education a lot more. And again, the rising cost of education is so prohibitive for so many that I think that we're really going to have to think about ensuring that kids don't come out with this debt and are prepared to have some sort of skill that will allow them to make a living. Mm.
So shifting focus here. So I don't know how to even phrase this, but mood-based shopping, content consumption. Like the first time I noticed moods, I feel like it was on Netflix or I don't know what it was. I was on something and it basically, I think it might've been Netflix, and basically it let you pick your mood. And that was the content it gave it, like it put in front of you. And I'm like, oh, I want to laugh, or I want this, I want that. Like, I think it's a really interesting concept. I didn't even notice that it was making its way into other parts of my life. And I'm thankful for it, because normally I am shopping for a mood if it comes to my, like what I'm watching or what I'm taking in. What are you seeing in this space? Because to me, it's just really interesting.
It's such a growing space. And I do think it was probably first music. You know, we used to make mixtapes based on like my, you know, Broken Hearted mixtape or my party mixtape. And Spotify and the streaming and music services figured that one out. And I think that the Netflixes of the world are starting to do that, because it makes sense, right? You know that. Yeah. You used to turn on the TV and you watched what you watched. It was there. Mm-hmm. And now you go, I want to laugh. I want to cry. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, be scared. So I think we'll see it in products too. I've seen it in a lot of drinks, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. It'll say, do you want to feel relaxed? Do you want to feel invigorated? Protein bars. But there's obviously room for that in everything. Fashion. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, be excited. I want to have fun, or I want to be cozy. I want to feel safe. So I think that it makes sense that as we are so dependent and so aware of our moods, and certainly even our own mental health, we're going to look for those things that do that. It'll be services. It'll be fashion. It'll be cosmetics. It'll be everything. If you can see it in food, all of those things are going to allow us to, I don't want to say indulge, but let's say, tap into whatever mood we feel like we want to feel. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's great. And you did take me way back. Now that you said, now that you kind of took me down memory lane, you're right. It did start with the mixtape. It was a mix. Right? For those of you out there that don't know what a mixtape is, we could say maybe start your Apple playlist.
Right, your playlist. Maybe made it,
there you go. They don't know what mixtapes are. It's okay.
It's okay. They can live without it, but because the playlists are better at it. But I think it is true that music was for a while the thing that really sort of explored our mood the most. Mm-hmm. And now that we have the opportunity to do it in other areas, it'll be interesting to see how music fits in. Does music enhance it? Does music become, I think that music is always so important, especially for generations. It really defines who they are. But I think these days, whether it be podcasts that people are listening to, or TV shows or shows that they're watching, or brands that they're buying, they're all going to say things about your mood.
Let's go further into Trendera. So, of course, you've been working on trends and forecasting trends for many years, as you mentioned. So just tell us a little bit more about the business. So tell us more about Trendera.
Well, you know, when I started Youth Intelligence back in the late 90s, it really was the first time that it was about understanding consumers and how did consumers feel and what's the voice of the consumer. There was always research, but this was really the voice of the consumer. And so there was a lot of opportunity to go out and talk to them and hear what they wanted to say and convey that to companies. And, you know, whether it was how they were feeling or what's the hot shade of pink, that's what we were trying to deliver to companies and to people and parents and people like that. As trends evolved and trend forecasting became a trend, these days I feel like it's almost as if we have access to too much information, right? If you search trends, you could find a zillion articles on Google about what the hot color pink is or what people are feeling. So it's more about saying, well, what's behind the trend? Why are people feeling the way that they feel? What do we do about that? Is that a sustainable trend? So what I really tried to shift to was to sort of involve more of the generation. So I would say we looked at Gen X, then we looked at Gen X and millennials, or otherwise known as Gen Y. And then we added Gen Z, who are sort of teenagers today. And now I have all these clients who are asking us, well, what about this next generation? What's their name going to be? because there are always changes. And yeah. So what we tried to do at Trendera is to say, well, let's show you who the generations are and what the differences are, mm-hmm. but also what are the similarities? Because if you're a business or you're a nonprofit or you're a school or you're a parent, you need to understand not just what makes my kid different from me so that mm-hmm. I can talk to them, sell to them, et cetera, but what makes them similar to me? What are the areas of overlap that we can all connect to? Yeah. So we do a ton of research. We do it by polls. We do it by surveys. We do it in person. We do it less in person now. We do focus groups. I mean, focus mm-hmm. groups, everyone hates focus groups, including me, because as I said, people often tell you what they think you want to hear, and mm-hmm. you have to decipher, well, what are they really saying? So whether we're working with a big retailer to figure mm-hmm. out why people aren't shopping there, or we're working with a nonprofit to figure out what messages are going to resonate, yeah. we just try to collect all of the information and then put it together and say, well, here's what we're hearing. Here's mm-hmm. what we think. And then what do you do about it?
Mm. And so how do the, well, first off, how is the information delivered? So tell us a little bit more about like how businesses use this information and how they implement it and how they receive it as well.
You know, when I first started with Youth Intelligence, we did something called the Cassandra Report, and it became mm-hmm. sort of this report that tons of companies bought that yeah. was talking to more influential people, to the trendsetters of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the word influencer has changed and the word trendsetter has changed. And whereas we used to do that report 4 times a year,
mm-hmm.
trends are changing more quickly than we can get the information out there. Yeah. So now we do something called the Trendera files, and we've mm-hmm. actually adjusted it at different times depending on what we feel our clients want. So last mm-hmm. year, for example, instead of doing it 4 times a year, we did it 10 mm-hmm. times a year because wow. things are just changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. Yet we didn't make them as comprehensive. This year, we're actually going back to 2 to 4 times a year because what we're saying is, look, we're not going to give you yes. the hottest YouTuber of the moment. That we can give you through our newsletter. That we can yeah. give you by talking to you. What we're going to give you is sort of a clear understanding of what's really happening and how that's going mm-hmm. to affect trends 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line. Mm-hmm. And yet previously we did it in a book. I don't know if I have my books here, but we used to sort of deliver these 150-page books. No one's going to read a book. So yeah. now we deliver it primarily through either webinars that are backed up by a presentation or a presentation to companies. We do them mm-hmm. usually about once a quarter, talking about what are the big trends that we're finding. And mm-hmm. yet what we're also finding is that people need us in a different way. They have questions that come up of a moment because mm-hmm. they have to be reactive to the things out there, whether it's employee issues or big issues happening mm-hmm. in the world. I think that people really feel like they don't, especially in companies or nonprofits, even schools, they feel like mm-hmm. they don't have a roadmap. And there are many things that mm-hmm. we don't know about and we're not going to talk about, whether it be policy yeah. or health, but we are going to say, here's what we're hearing that people are saying. Mm-hmm. And also the people we talk to has changed. So it used to be that you would have to find an influencer or a trendsetter in the skate yeah. park or in the tattoo parlors. Now everybody thinks they're a trendsetter. So it's usually the people who think they aren't setting the trends who really are.
Wow, it's great insight. And so what are the types of businesses or individuals that you find get the most value out of getting the content at Trendera? So like who typically like is a subscriber or user of the information?
You know, I'm really, as I said, grateful to have worked with so many big companies for so yeah. long. And because the more you get to know them, the more you can help them. Entertainment mm-hmm. is a big one for us because yeah. for streamers or networks or movie studios who mm-hmm. are creating a lot of content, they need to know everything from the big to the small. What's the yeah. cool drink we should put in there to, should we be making more horror films or mm-hmm. more sci-fi? What are the themes that are going to resonate a year mm-hmm. from now when we get this out there? But then a lot of retailers, fashion, cosmetics, yeah. they want to work with us too. We just, if they're just making a mascara, there are mm-hmm. only so many trends we can tell them that are going to be relevant to them. But, mm-hmm. and then personally, I love working with nonprofits. I love mm-hmm. working with schools. I love working with parents because, especially now that I am I've been a parent for a long time, but having gone through that, it's really helpful. I certainly don't have all the answers. I made personal mistakes. I wish mm-hmm. my life were perfect so that I could say, oh, you can come to me. I'm the Oracle. Hardly. All we're doing is saying, We find the information and we convey it to you. Doesn't mean we won't make some of the mistakes ourselves.
Yeah. And so speaking of finding the information, so not asking you to give up your proprietary process or not too far, but tell us just a little bit of what you can about the process and what it takes to put together these reports this trend analysis, really.
You know, one of the things, it's not a secret sauce. I think that, in fact, we often say to clients, look, if you have the capability to do this in-house, you should do it. It's about listening. It's really about listening and finding information and being open to the answers being different from what you want them to be. So it is, for us, it's big surveys. And look, big data is such a big word out there, but data can only tell you so much. So we often find that when it comes to trends, you're not going to find trends in numbers immediately because it takes a little while for things to catch up, for the general public to hear things. Now, if you're talking about what people are watching on TV or what people, you know, there are lots of areas where big data helps. Look at all of the Facebooks and Googles. They're all about big data. And that's helpful to them. For us, it's about asking people questions and then looking for clues. Where are the subtle changes happening? Then we talk to people. We talk to people individually. We talk to them in groups. So once we have the foundation of here's some numbers that look interesting, we can see if those numbers are backed up in what people say. And then we try to talk to what we consider influencers, and they may or may not be on social media. They're people who are influential in their particular area. A doctor can be an influencer. A politician can be an influencer, but it's also a stylist, an editor, a writer, a tagger. So we take all of that information and we try to sort of put it all together and say, okay, here's what we think matters. We look on the web. You know, people will say, oh, well, do you mind if someone copies your trend? It's not my trend. We're just seeing what's happening out there and hopefully interpreting it in a way that should be consistent in what people are seeing. We might see something sooner. We might see something later. But when it comes to the big macro trends, it's gathering as much information as possible. If you want specific things like online retail trends or what color is hot or what TV show is going to be hot, sometimes it's a little bit of crystal ball, but hopefully you're also taking the experience of, well, this worked before, so this might work again, or here are the shifts that will not allow this to work again.
Well, Jane, I have to tell you, it's been great getting a bird's eye view of like your vantage point and what goes into creating Trendera, what went into creating Trendera, and also the research that you publish for your clients who are getting value from it. So that's awesome. So I just have to ask, I mean, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Trendera?
I love putting information out there. So for me, it's about writing, and that might be writing on the web. It might be writing in books. It might be hopefully speaking more when people are back together, because I love getting to say what we think and then getting feedback about what we think. We will always do, or we'll do the Trendera files as long as our clients want it. We do a weekly newsletter just for free so that people can get information about what's hot out there. And then, you know, I don't know what else will happen for us next, but for me, it's always about listening and being curious. And I hope I never get to a point where I am that, you know, writer who I read, who I said, oh, he doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what these younger generations are thinking, because that's when I need to stop, is when I can't convey it accurately or in the way that these next generations would want it conveyed.
If somebody's watching this and they want to learn more, or they want to follow Trendera, I mean, you mentioned you had a free newsletter as well. I mean, how do people connect and engage with the brand overall?
You know, the easiest way is to go to our website, which is just trendera.com, and they can sign up for the weekly newsletter. They can see what our reports are like. They can get samples of them. They can follow me on Instagram, which is just Jane Buckingham, or Twitter. I'm not a big Snapchatter. I think my kids would kill me if I ever created a TikTok. So those are sort of the big outlets for us.
Fantastic. And we'll also put those on for the audience. We'll also put all of that information in the show notes. So you can just go head on over by clicking on the website. So happy to do that. And speaking to the audience, if this is your first time with us, Mission Matters is a platform that's all about amplifying the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts, and really bring them on the show to talk about their mission, like how they build their business, like why do they do what they do, and how are they adding value to the marketplace. So if that's content that sounds interesting to you, we definitely encourage you to hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Jane, really, it has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I'm loving the trends that you gave and shared with us today, and looking forward to seeing more out of you in the future. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.